time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Dr. Stephen Gilbert and Tom Buchanan. Dr. Stephen Gilbert and Tom Buchanan are both with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. They're both on the board of directors, and Steve is also the vice president of the board, and Tom previously served with Greenpeace before WPSR. And they're in to talk about a recent developments and a new report that came out this week regarding the Columbia Generating Station, Washington State's only remaining nuclear power plant. Steve and Tom, thank you both very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
So start out, tell us a little bit about WPSR.
Well, WPSR, local chapter of Physicians for Social Responsibility, works to prevent what we cannot be cured. So really prevent health effects that are out there, from climate change to toxic chemical exposure, and most things nuclear, nuclear abolition. And you have to remember, Washington State's got the trifecta of nuclear issues with Bangor Submarine Base, one of the largest concentrations of nuclear weapons. We've got Hanford, one of the most toxic waste sites in the Western Hemisphere, and we have the Columbia Generating Station. So Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility is working to prevent and eliminate nuclear weapons. We'd really like to be nuclear-free by 2053 in Washington State.
And the thing that's interesting about the CGS reactor, which is the focus today, is the fact that it's got a whoops history. It was part of the failed whoops operation that took place in the 80s, and a number of plants went down, and the only one that really was finally completed and built was the, quote, Columbia Generating Station. They changed the name because they didn't like the whoops description that was taking place, and they wanted to stay as far away as possible from any mention of nuclear power. And a lot of people really don't know about the existence of this plant, 30 years in operation, right on the shores of the Columbia, and we're paying, as ratepayers in the Northwest, it's not just Washington, we're paying a debt of these plants that are still in closure, as well as this plant that has a large history of debt. It's about 30% of the overall BPA budget is paying off debts. It's a significant issue.
But you know, Tom, I really want to congratulate Columbia Generating Station for running for the last 30 years and having, you know, a reasonably successful run. But I really believe it is time to shut that plant down. We've been lucky, haven't had a major accident, haven't had major contamination. But there are a lot of reasons why this plant is just no longer viable. It was sited in the wrong place to begin with. But it's time to move on from this and move away from a toxic and failed technology.
And I agree, Steve. We don't have this touch tag team here, but we 30 years is an amazing history. And a lot of plants are like this. But that 30 years can have one bad day. And especially when it's older, it's more brittle. It has stuff that's wearing out. It's got stuff that's corroding. It's hastened because of both chemicals that are used in the neutralizing of the reactor process all the time, as well as the plant, the turbine blades, the generators, the concrete. There's lots of evidence that this plant is aging quite quickly right now.
Yeah, nuclear plants do not age well.
And so that one bad day can give us Fukushima. And if we have the storage facility, which is over 15 stories high up in the reactor at Hanford, and has all this weight with all this water that has to be completed every day, 24 hours a day, there's 20,000 gallons of water that are in this thing. And if that stuff starts to, just by the heat of the reactor operation, if that's somebody's interrupts that process of cooling, we have a dangerous situation on our hands. A fuel fire is one of the most repeated that's happened in the past with the world's reactors. So that's one issue right there that's incredibly dangerous. It's not that we have a bunch of waste that's a site that's stable. We have an unstable situation of waste being produced every day at Hanford and at the CGS.
And that's really what our report focused on. The report by Bob Alvarez looked into what's the waste storage issue at Columbia Generating Station, what's being done about it, and the type of fuel that's being stored, the amount of cesium that's been generated at that plant is greater than the amount of radioactivity from the Hanford nuclear site. So it's really got a very serious issue with waste storage, and we do not know how to deal with nuclear waste. We have no permanent site to store that waste at, and we're just accumulating more waste in that area.
The spent fuel pool, it's quote called spent fuel, but it's highly irradiated, and we have two reactor cores worth of fuel up at that spent fuel site right now. That's being cooled every day, 24 hours a day. And that if that stuff starts to boil down, or if there's a slight lessening of that water level, it's like 22 feet higher than where the fuel assemblies are now in that spent fuel pool. If that gets down, it doesn't take long for that thing to thermally heat up, cause the zirconium cladding to catch fire, produce hydrogen, and produce a highly explosive situation.
So we should acknowledge Columbia Generating Station has moved some of those spent toxic fuel rods into dry cast storage, which we want to encourage, and we want to acknowledge that they've been really have been good and one of the leaders in the country for moving to the dry cast storage.
And that's the point of Fukushima again. The dry casks at Fukushima all were stabilized, even during that earthquake, that serious 9.0 earthquake, as well as the tsunami. Those dry casks at the Fukushima site were not breached, and to that extent, we have those dry cast storage that's much more stable at CGS, standing in concrete pads right now. And we recommend that we do more of that, and Bob does too, and Bob's study does that.
Are those the dry casks, are those up above the reactor as well?
No. They're down on the ground on pads. That because of the weight, they're much more stable. That thing up on top has the spent fuel pool has an incredible possibility of even in a 7 or 8 point earthquake to start swaying back and forth because of the heat. I'm sorry, because of the actual weight up on top. And that becomes something that could fail even within that reactor. There hasn't been tests really done on that. Structural engineers have talked about that in England, about what's this vector of the amount of weight and the height and what happens during an earthquake. And things start to fall apart during an earthquake.
Yeah, we've also looked into the whole earthquake and did a report on that too, and showing that the new study show there is increased vulnerability to the plant through the earthquakes. And if you look at the Hanford nuclear site and the vitrification plant, they actually did an earthquake study there and retrofitted the plant to make seismically upgrade the vitrification plant. And they have not seismically upgraded Columbia Generating Station, which really needs to be done too, because we cannot afford to have a breach at that plant, because if we contaminate the site around the Columbia Generating Station, that could impede access to the Hanford nuclear site and the tank and the waste farms there that need to be monitored and worked on a daily basis.
And that WHIPS facility, the DOE WHIP that has done the upgrade, is only a mile away from the CGS plant. So it's very close, and there's a lot of earthquake activity that we've spotted that geologists have told us about that we really didn't know about before. So all that study shows that there's longer cracks that are going on between the eastern and the western part of the state. It goes underneath the Cascades as well as local hotspots there.
Yeah, didn't you co-author a letter to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Steve, back in last year with different points critiquing the problems, the earthquake potential? One of
yes.
them being that the original earthquake that they were basing things on, the 1872 earthquake, they said was 180 miles away when, in fact, it's found that it was about half that distance, about 90.
Right. I think it was a really nice report that we produced through Physician for Social Responsibility, and just documenting that we've got new data, new information that needs to be accounted for, and Columbia Generating Station, Nuclear Regulatory Commission have got to do updated earthquake reports, and really, if they want to continue operating that plant, invest in seismically upgrading that plant to withstand an earthquake of that magnitude.
Yeah, your letter included that the number of faults doubled.
Yeah, it's serious, and it was acknowledged at Hanford Nuclear Site by upgrades to the vitrification plant. And for some reason, the Columbia Generating Station has not followed through with and taking their responsibility to ensure that that plant is safe for the public, safe for where it's located, and fix it so nuclear or earthquakes do not affect it.
One of the things that's in the way is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the commercial venture is different than the U.S. government and what they've done in terms of their own standards. The NRC's let nuclear industry off the hook all over the place, not just here. But one of the things that they don't do is require that people do a study if there's new evidence. They back off on those things. Even after Fukushima, their requirements, they have a whole thing of a steering committee learning operation where they produced information, the staff did, that would be useful to learn, the lessons learned from Fukushima. And the commission, which is an appointed commission that's not elected in any sense, they vetoed almost everything. And you know, we have a vent that's now required to go into the reactor core and let off a lot of gas if it's produced by whatever means, whatever problems. And that would be filtered. But in fact, even though it's required, it's been changed. The date of when it should be installed now is past 2016. So we're not learning too well with these NRC requirements, even when they do requirements.
And just to emphasize, the Columbia Generating Station is a GE boiling water reactor, which is the same style as the plants at Fukushima that melted down.
Which also had the waste kept above
Correct.
Them on the top
exactly.
floor.
And if you look at that, those pictures of that waste, that they've covered it with sometimes with plastic, basically, to cover it since then, just visually. It does help in terms of bringing up so much. There is a lot of stuff that's going into the atmosphere still that has been prevented because they put that wrap around it. But in fact, everything's going into the water, and that's the problem there. But you look at the pictures of how much explosion and how much destruction took place, and the spent fuel up on top was the source of those fires in all cases, except the reactor cores were also melting. So they had a double jeopardy going on. But the spent fuel pool is an incredible source of waste and damage if it gets out of control.
And hence why the TEPCO was put a high priority on getting that spent fuel out of Reactor 4.
That's right.
And in fact, I just saw this morning from Bo Jacobs, located over in Hiroshima, that last night in Japan they had a 6.8 earthquake that was 120 miles away from 20 to 30 reactors. So this situation continues.
They have, the country of Japan is the most seismically active of any of the literally in the world's space, but the eastern part of Washington has quite a bit more reactor. I mean, people with this location, relocation of where the center of this 1870 earthquake was, which was basically done with letters, testimony, much, much later after the fact, it was located up by Canada because the geologist that directed the study said, well, we want this away from all the activity down in the central part of the country. You know, we didn't even have a reactor at that time, but the geologist that worked on that certainly was during the reactor days.
Yeah, coming back to Columbia Generating Station, I really want to emphasize that it was sited in the wrong place. If you look at the waste that's around Hanford, they have a site called 61811, which is one of the most hazardous areas of the Hanford Reservation, and it's located right next to the parking lot of Columbia Generating Station. They're now looking at trying to remediate that site. And what the bizarre thing is, in 1988, the records were destroyed, so they have no good documentation of what waste in that site, and they consider it one of the most hazardous areas of the Hanford area. So in reality, the Columbia Generating Station should never have been where it is. And they actually went back to amend its license, acknowledging this waste was there. And they're now struggling to figure out how to clean up that waste area.
When the NRC or any of the nuclear industry has to characterize waste as, quote, high level, that's serious. That's the stuff that's in the 177 tanks that are on the Hanford site that are leaking, but they're still more stabilized than anything that goes on in the spent fuel pool because of that spent fuel pool is being added to and subtracted from, unloaded every 2 years. A third of the operation core is taken up and moved into the spent fuel, and some of the stuff that's cooler comes out and goes into dry cask or they stay in the pool. So there's a densely packed spent fuel pool up there that's irradiated, and it's not spent. It is highly radioactive, and that kind of stuff is ending up in the 618 burial site from the old nuclear days, and that stuff is still very hot, stored badly, and it's, you know, they haven't characterized it. They've characterized the 61810 burial site, which is also close to the Whoops facility there. I'm describing CGS as Whoops. But they really not. They are. You know, they've had an explosion at that site, the 10 site. But they're careful about. You know, they've dug into it. Now they have a little more experience with dealing with that burial site. The 61811, which is right next to the parking lot, they really don't know how much is there.
The bottom line is, if you add up all the risk associated with continued operation of Columbia Generating Station, from being an aging plant right next to Hanford, right next to a very hazardous waste area, to not being green, you know, and I just want to emphasize that too, that the fuel cycle, and you have to look at the fuel cycle of mining uranium, purifying uranium to run the reactors, it is not a green operation. It has a lot of carbon issues right there. But the risks of operating that site are just not worth the benefits. And they've been lucky. They've had no major problems. But it's just it's time to let go of this project and move on.
I'm wondering if we can get into a few more of the specifics that came out of the report and the press conference that
yes.
you and Heart of America Northwest did earlier this week. One of the items that Bob Alvarez's report talked about was that the emergency plan for if there is a problem at the CGS was, I believe, to just have a fire truck, pumper truck come and use the local hydrant to keep the system cool until what happens.
And you know, the thing that's interesting, they're on King 5 describing that they actually drove a fire truck out from Ohio to put it on site as the backup fire that we can extinguish fires with this fire truck. So their plan is to take a fire hydrant that's there supplying water. They don't take it from the Columbia. They have a fire hydrant with a fire supply water system there. They hook a hose up to it and take it to a relatively inadequate fire truck and pump a stream of water up over 200 feet, which is closed until it explodes. How are you going to get water and something that's stopped? How are you going to get water up there? You can't. You know that's impossible with that fuel truck. I don't think there's even a possibility. Oh, they have another option. The other option is to hook another hose up and take it over to the cooling towers. They're squat to the cooling towers and take the water out of that. Well, are they going to use that same fire truck to pump that stuff up at that level? This requires a lot of extra energy and backup diesel water pumps. It takes a huge amount of effort to get that stuff all the way up the water column to a spent fuel potential.
This is assuming the roads are okay, the debris in the field's not blocking access to the site, there's not radioactive material that's also endangering workers that are there. So there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts over that safety issue.
And no pipe breakage
from
the earthquake that just took out the cooling system.
That's right. And Bob's study is focusing on this spent fuel pool correctly, because that's the problem still over at Fukushima. You have a spent fuel pool in number 4 that hasn't been destroyed, and they pulled a lot of the fuel assemblies out of it, but the ones that are really damaged, those are the ones that are still left. There's still those things there. This is almost 4 years past when the accident took place over there.
We also have been using at Columbia Generating Station high burn up fuel, so it's burned for a longer period of time, making it more radioactive, which means that when they put it in the spent fuel pools, it has to stay there for a longer period of time and is generating more heat. So it will burn, it'll evaporate the water faster and is a bigger hazard. So the high burn up is fuel was just a way to use the fuel longer and reduce the cost for operating the plant.
It's also more enriched. It's like almost 50% more enriched, so that the fission process is hotter, is literally hotter. What happens to the fuel assemblies that are designed for lower heat and lower radiation cycle? Those fuel assemblies start to buckle and they start to crack a little bit. And when you pull that stuff out and put it in the spent fuel pool, you have a problem with that corrosion even before you're putting it in the fuel pool. Does that stuff begin to get more and more corroded? Yes. That's part of the Bob study. He had pictures of that corroded fuel in the fuel assemblies and how they start to pop, that small zirconium rod, which is really the size of my thumb. It's not that large, but there's 17 in each one of those fuel assemblies, and then those fuel assemblies are stacked more densely in that spent fuel pool, and you've got a condition of heat that's fairly serious, thermal heat as well as radioactive.
The other thing we should touch on in Bob's report is bringing in part-time workers into the area. So you use workers to come into the area, particularly during fueling, recycling operations occurs about every 2 years, and they're exposed to more radiation because they're part-time workers. They can be exposed acutely to more radiation, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and that's in excess to the regular plant workers there. They try to keep with less radiation exposure because they're there for a longer period of time. But it really shows that it's an ongoing issue, a long, ongoing worker issue and worker safety issue at these plants.
So by bringing in fresh workers and who haven't had previous exposures, and you're kind of spreading out your yearly allotment of exposure to workers over a larger workforce?
Exactly. And there's four times the number of workers, transient workers, that come in within a span of every 2 years because they unload half of that reactor, a third of that reactor, every 2 years. They shut the plant down. They pull it takes a two-month process. And when you pull those rods out and you move them over and there's other stuff being worked on because there's so much corrosion and issues of maintenance that are going on, there's always problems. And that's the greatest period of exposure for workforce. That's when they really bring them in. The critical people that are exposed are the maintenance people, the electricians, the mechanics, the pipe fitters. In a regular process, they're the ones that are closest to the reactor radiation, and they have the most exposure. That's part of Bob's study as well.
And part of the boiling water reactor, this style of reactor, tends to generate more radioactive equipment, more opportunities for radiation exposure. The workers.
And I have to imagine temporary workers don't have the experience, the number of years or right. that your regular permanent workers.
I'm wondering, and Bob would know because he knows a lot about this nuclear industry, how much they actually have badges in relation to those transient situations. Because one of the things that happens to those transient workers is they go away and there's no records kept on those people. That's, I mean, in terms of accumulation and so if they get sick, they're not recorded in Benton County and in around the Tri-Cities. They're recorded in whatever hospital is handling them someplace else. So there's a huge amount of exposure that just kind of walks away every 2 years.
Well, and as Steve pointed out earlier, the 88, a lot of records just magically disappeared related to the site. So,
yeah, and dose reconstruction is always a difficult operation. And what you really want to do to prevent any potential harm is just to eliminate radiation exposure, and that requires eliminating the use of this plant and ongoing operation of Columbia Generating Station.
Well, it's a pretty grim picture.
I'd like to touch just a minute on the financial stuff again. You know, in 2013, according to the the annual report of Energy Northwest, BPA paid $418 million for power from Columbia Generating Station. And according to Robert McCullough, if BPA had purchased that power on the mid-Columbia market, it would have paid just $218 million of savings, a difference of $200 million on our electric bills. For 1 year. So we're paying more to keep the operation of Columbia Generating Station going. There's just no reason financially to keep running this site.
And they've had this deficit financing condition since 2009. 2009 to 2014, they have not made money. BPA and the ratepayers have had to pay for that extra amount of nonprofit money that they have put into the system. So they're a losing business, and there's a whole thing that Robert McCullough has referred to in the history of BPA's contracts. There's something called the market test. The market test should be done legally to find out whether people are actually making money, the contributors, whether it's dams or whether it's nuclear. And nuclear hasn't been meeting that market test over the last 5 years. That's McCullough's study.
And, you know, just coming back to workers for a second, I just want to acknowledge, too, that there are a couple lawsuits being started up here to help protect the workers at the Hanford site because of the waste tanks and vapor exposure from the waste tanks. So it was just announced last week that Bob Ferguson, the Washington State Attorney General, is suing the Department of Energy because the Federal Department of Energy has not adequately protected workers at the Hanford site. In addition, Hanford challenged one of the local nuclear waste groups, and I should also mention Heart of America, has worked hard on the report from Bob Alvarez, that we've got another suit going. We're trying to sue the Department of Energy or give notice for suit. Both these are giving notice for suit to protect the workers at Hanford from vapor exposure from the tank farms. So this is another example of just the hazardous nature of radiation and the best way to reduce exposures, prevent and be proactive and precautionary about workers around radiation.
And just to add to Steve's modest attempt here, but we should take credit. Washington PSR has also been a part of that suit that Hanford Challenge has also taken up. So the two of us, that those two organizations, we have a suit in addition to the Bob Ferguson Attorney General's suit. So this is both on target in relation to Hanford. We registered the suit. They have 90 days to respond. You know, how do they get out of this? They've gotten out of stuff like this before, but there's more and more evidence and more people, more and more organizations that are putting them on the line. You've got to be public about this.
To be fair, Hanford Challenge really led the department, the prosecutor here in Washington State to do this.
Absolutely.
Hanford Challenge has been fantastic. They've supported whistleblowers that have come out of Hanford and have really been leaders in giving voice to the workers at Hanford area.
And one of those things that's also critical are the workers' unions. They've come forward and they've said publicly, this is a serious thing that affects us all, and we want some studies on this, and we want it to stop.
About 2 minutes left. There are alternatives to shutting this down. The CGS, is my understanding, it's only supplying 4% of energy for Washington State. Is that correct?
No, this for Washington State. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. But, Steve, didn't you just slam some solar panels on your house recently?
Thanks so much for mentioning that, Mike. Yeah, it's been great. I'm really concerned about my grandchildren. I want to have a sustainable future for them. And there are good alternatives. I just put 30 solar panels on the roof of my house. And since July, have generated over 3 megawatts of power and sold about half of that back to Seattle City Light. So Washington State's got great incentives for putting solar panels on the house. And I'd really encourage people to look into that carefully and get an estimate for adding solar panels and really moving toward more distributed power generation. We've seen what Germany's done with that, where Germany is moving toward producing 25% of its power from solar and wind. And this can be done. We can move toward a decentralized power generation system. And that's what we should be doing and not building more coal-fired and nuclear power. We've got to move away from these extractive technologies and be thinking about future generations and our children's children.
And Steve's been using his two granddaughters as poster children for this whole operation with solar power. They're standing right next to the non-radiating solar panels with big smiles on their face because this is the future of our renewable power situation in our country and basically in the world. We got to get away from this primary sources and our nuclear stuff. They're not renewable. They're not environmentally friendly.
Speaking away from getting rid of things, nuclear, you got to remember two-thirds of the plutonium that sits up at Bangor came from Hanford, and we've got to stop investing in nuclear submarines and our nuclear weapon systems. And the way it's headed right now, we'll be spending over $1 trillion on nuclear weapons again, and that is not sustainable for the future and not good for my grandchildren.
All right. Well, with that, we are just about out of time, talking with Dr. Stephen Gilbert and Tom Buchanan, both with the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. And how can people find out more about these reports and your organization? You have a website?
Excellent. It's WPSR.org, and there's information on CGS at that site that's really important, and also on the nuclear weapons eradication program that we've got and renewables.
And please also go to Hanford Challenge and Heart of America's website. Support these nonprofit organizations that work hard for the citizens of Washington State and really the country's people to bring these issues to light.
And one other, we also have a CGS website, which is nuclearfreenorthwest.org, and that also has even more detail about some of the stuff that's going on at the site, which has never been transparent. I mean, we've had 30 years of non-transparency, and we want to change that.
And we want Washington State to be nuclear-free by 2053.
All right. Well, with that, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.